Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Shane Barker of TraceFuse. Give me a quick introduction to your skill set and where you attained it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jeremy. So, yeah, my name is Shane Barker. So my skill set has been, I think, kind of like everybody's. You know, over time, it grows in certain directions. So I started off in the digital space, which I've been doing forever. I mean, we were an SEO way back in the day before it was called SEO. And influencer marketing was something that we came upon. And I ended up becoming an instructor over at UCLA because of that, because of we created the curriculum over there. So my journey originally was more offline based stuff, right? I mean, we're looking at things like, you know, I used to own a bar in Chico, California. I used to do a number of things. And all of that I kind of realized also kind of played into online as well, right? I mean, obviously trying to generate leads online, which is, you know, kind of the pinnacle, right? It's kind of where you want to be. You want to be able to grab leads from all over the world. And we did very good at that. I mean, we were, like I said, from the beginning, really just testing stuff and kind of seeing what was going to work and what wasn't going to work. And so that's kind of where we've gotten today. Like I said, I used to own a bar. I taught at UCLA. We have obviously my company, TraceFuse, now. We still have ShaneBarker.com, which is where we do a lot of our SEO work. And a lot of promotions and stuff like that. And you should speak internationally, you know, all the fun stuff, man. My journey has been, there's been a lot of ups and downs, as I think everybody's has, right? And you learn from the good as you do the bad. And it's kind of gotten us where we're at today. So yeah, I'm excited.
What niche in SEO was the most challenging?
Yeah, I would have to say it really depends on, I mean, for us, we went after just really pretty much anybody that wanted to get online leads, right? Our thing was, is not only, you know, backlinks and driving traffic, but the conversion of that traffic. So, you know, that was the biggest challenge for us, wasn't necessarily driving the traffic, but it was really working with people that can convert on the other side, right? Because we drive the traffic and, you know, I mean, that depends on the quality of the traffic and, you know, the types of people you're driving there. But that was one of the big things we learned early on is that, you know, we can drive all kinds of traffic to you, but if we don't know how many you're converting and how that's working out and what your system is, how quickly are you responding, those are all very key variables on, you know, if somebody's looking for somebody, you know how it goes. You wait 24 hours and they're going to have 10 people that they reach out to because they just Google searched you, or, you know, now they put a prompt out and look through ChatGPT or Perplexity. Or something, Perplexity. So yeah, that's the hardest part is, you know, hey, you can drive it. And even if it's not a lot of traffic, it's nice to know what that conversion rate is. And so that was probably one of the biggest issues that we had that we realized, like, hey, if you don't know how to, you know, show attribution on your side, we can set it up. And if you guys don't want to set that up, then it's like, why, right? I mean, we can drive traffic and say, oh, these people came to your site, but who cares? I would rather drive 5 people and convert 2 than drive 500 and convert 0, right? In my opinion, anyways.
No, I came from a background. I started in customer support for realtors, and they're just like a niche hosting service for realtors. And they kept calling in asking. First, it was how do I rank better on Google, and then those people would call back once we experimented and be like, "Well, how come I'm not closing more deals? How do I get more leads?" And then the next one was, I'm not selling any houses, even though you get traffic and you get leads. So it kind of, you know, with commercial real estate or residential real estate, there's like that length of the funnel for one. But it's also like, you know, your home service niche, like live or die by how quickly you respond. Oh, and yeah. It is insane to me how many service businesses are terrible at follow-up. I mean, I worked with a company called Lead Truffle, and they shorten that. They put this form and it converts right to a text and uses an AI convo starter to qualify the lead and filter out, oh, you're in the wrong area, or you want poured concrete and not asphalt, or you want gravel and not concrete. But most people aren't using tools like that. Most people, like, I think I'm trying to remember the study. There's someone that took the time and they submitted 1,000 forms on local service sites, and 90% were not answered at all. And that's only insane. 1% were answered the same day.
That's insane. Because that's like literally that's the people that are interested in your service. Like, why would you not? And especially if you don't have time to respond, that's great. But you got to set something up, right? Have a brother, a sister, somebody at least respond, at least get some general information from them, right? To at least just to show that the customer service side of it's there, because that's just crazy to me. And that was one of the hard parts is like in the beginning, if you don't, great, I sent you 100 leads, but I don't know what you're doing on your side, right? So that's the hard part. I can send you all kinds of people. And of course, people always want better leads, but it's like, well, I can send you the best leads in the world. But at the end of the day, if you guys aren't doing your part and responding to them within 10 minutes, like, or I guess even a day, I mean, you just got to be part of that top 1% that are responding in within one day. That's insane to me. But, you know, that's part of the, you know, when we would talk with, you know, their SEO clients, really any clients, we would have a lot of qualifying questions. Right, because what we realized over the years was in the beginning was like, hey, if you're willing to pay and we can send you traffic, we know we can do that. We can build this thing out, give us whatever, 3-6 months. Well, then what we realized later on was like, wait a second, we really have to ask very specific questions to see, A, if you're the right customer for us, but also what is the expectation and do you have things set up on your side, right? Yeah. So that's a big, I mean, because once again, no matter how good a leads or how many I send them, like if you're not on your side calling them, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot I call those people back. Like, really? Like, you know how you get, like, I'm bringing customers, they're knocking on your door and you're just looking through your peephole going, nah, I'm good today. It's like, well, wait a second. You can't be good today. You got to keep working.
Yeah. I did an interview with a guy and his tagline is literally call the damn leads. Drew B. Wilson. I mean, like, that's his whole shtick is like, he's got a hat and everything. He's like, call the damn leads. And it's funny because I think it comes to a conversation about SEO in general that I've been having. You know, I was just talking earlier today with Michael McDougall of Right Thing Agency, and he's like, you know, SEOs, you know, we had this age where we could just be Google reverse engineers. And that was all we did, and we could get paid well, and we could monetize it, and we could sell that. But those days are done. We gotta be deeper in the funnel. We have to be more interconnected with other digital marketing teams. Talking to Melissa Pop of Rickety Roo, she's like, you gotta know what email, you know, sends you have coming up and how you're going to match your content strategy with, you know, you've got a 2,000, 4,000 email list. What are you going to do with that traffic? And how might that benefit your organic campaign? Are they going to try to drive them to secondary sites? What kind of CTAs? Because are you going to send your email people to the same organic pages? Or do you want to try to filter that out and show something different? And are you running paid ads, social ads, or reusing, you know, how are you configuring your funnel? Are you expecting them all to come into your site? Or are you pushing them off to the side into your social media ad construct to get into your email to then get to your site to qualify? You know, like, we need to be a lot more about digital marketing than just I know Google's algorithm and I'm a reverse Google engineer.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to align it, right? It's all got to be aligned. I mean, I think so. What people don't realize that, you know, doing a campaign isn't just doing a campaign. Like, there's so much work that goes into before the campaign even goes out to make sure for attribution and making sure everybody's all set up. I mean, I used to get about when we used to do a lot of crowdfunding stuff way back in the day, and people would come to me, you know, 15 days before it was going to be done, and like, hey, what can you do? And I'm like, nothing. There's 15 days left, and you want, you know, $1 million, and you've got $86 that, you know, people have donated. Like, it's probably not going to happen. What happens is you guys should have reached out to us months ahead of time and then us prepare for that, right? Because there's so much work that goes on in the beginning before you even go live with the campaign. And that's kind of what you're saying there. At the end of the day, it's like, hey, this is great, but we need to, like, you need to prep. You need to make sure, and you're working with other departments, which is another level of complexity because people have opinions and this, that, and the other. But it's like, how do we, you know, at the end of the day, there was a good friend of mine who said, just press the red button, like, just launch it. Not just launch it, but, like, you have to get it out there, but you want to make sure that there's some things in place so you can know, hey, did this work or did it not work? Because how do you make an educated decision if you don't know how many people closed, how many leads came in? Once again, people look at, you know, some vanity metrics, which is fine. But at the end of the day, for me, it's like money in the door. You know, how much money did I make off this campaign? Did I break even? Did I lose a little bit of money? What did we learn? Not to say we wouldn't do another campaign, but we got to tweak things, right? Usually your first campaign isn't going to be a home run, like, for the most part, right? I mean, there's going to be things, there's going to be small wins, but it's not going to be you know, it really comes down to the expectation of the client, right? What is the client looking at and what do they think is going to be a big win, right? Because my big win could be to drive this many leads, and for their big win, I want to get this much traffic. Those are synonymous, but they're not exactly the same. So what are we looking for here, right? And that's where, like I said, the probing questions or the qualifying questions were always so important, because I want to see if you're going to be a good fit. If you're realistic, if you say, hey, I want to spend 10 grand, but I'd like to make a million, so would I. I mean, that sounds awesome, right? Like, I mean, who doesn't want that? Those are great metrics, but like, what are we talking about realistically, right? What do we think we can pull off here? And if you have a realistic expectation, great, then that makes sure that everybody at least closer to being on the same page, right? I think it's just very pertinent.
I think it's also about targeting too, right? I mean, like, like McDougald brought up, like, he had somebody who said, we want clients who are north of Old Hickory Road in Nashville, but not south of Old Hickory Road. And that's funny. It's funny to anybody who knows Nashville, because Old Hickory is literally a circle all the way around Nashville. So north of it could be north, or it could be literally, you know, 50 miles south. And for a custom home, you know, custom pool, and you're not willing to go to the other side of town to do it, like, you're looking at totally different campaigns of, like, I'm targeting Nashville versus I only want, like, this geographic radius specifically. Yeah. You're
it's
going to have a lot
pretty tight. Harder. Yeah, I mean, got to figure out how many people are in that area, right? I mean, how big is your pool that you're going to be trying to tap into? So, I mean, that's a very specific search, especially if it's from an SEO perspective. I mean, that's like, how do you, you're talking about streets. Yeah. Makes it a little difficult, you know?
You're not even targeting the whole city, just like the southern-ish part. But it's not called the South Nashville. It's literally in the west part of Nashville. So you can't you can't say South Nashville, because then you're referring to a totally different part of the city.
Yeah, well, that's where the qualifying questions come in, right? Where it's like, hey, you're going to ask questions like that, and they say, hey, I want these 9 streets, the only ones to be included. It's like, well, hold on here. How are we going to do that? There's IP addresses and stuff, but that doesn't mean they're perfect. If somebody's, you know, is inquiring and they're at work, what does that mean? They could still live there, right, in the other area. So yeah, that's something where you got to talk people off the ledge and say, okay, here, this is what we can do. This is realistic. And also on those, let's say 9 streets, if that was a deal, if there's only 80 people there, what kind of campaign, you know, if we get a 1-2% response rate and we got to find those people, that's just, you know, I mean, it's nice to have a bigger pool of people, obviously, to go after, and then, you know, be realistic about what you think the outcome should be.
What's the unique selling proposition behind TraceFuse? Like, what's your focus? What are you doing there that's unique?
Yeah, so TraceFuse is interesting. So we started it about 5 years ago. Really, the first 2 years was just a lot of R&D, trying to figure out if we could crack the code. And really what we do in a nutshell is we just help Amazon sellers remove negative reviews on their product listing. So, and when I say that, I don't mean, you know, just any bad review they don't like. I mean, there's some good reviews that can be negative that can be constructive, right? That you can learn what you need to change with your product. There's some valuable things there. So we don't just go after any review. We go after reviews that violate Amazon's own rules or their own guidelines. So somebody mentions a competitor or pricing or cussing, hate speech. Those are all things that can't be in a review. So somebody could write a legit review, but at the end of the day, if they wrote, this is a, you know, S word product, then you can't say that, right? I mean, you can't use a cuss word in any review that you do. You can't mention a competitor. We'll see that a lot where people will go, oh, you know, I really like this, you know, water bottle, but I sure wish that I sure wish they had this color in my favorite water bottle, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, well, wait a second. Now it's kind of like a backhanded slap. You're like, wait a second. Did you just compliment me or say that my competitors are better? I'm trying to figure this out. Well, those are things. That's the reason why Amazon doesn't want you to mention competitors or pricing. You could have a special deal today where you buy something for $30 and they go and buy it again. It's $40. And they said, hey, I originally bought this for $29.95. Now it's $39.95. There's no way I'd pay that now. Right. And it's like, oh, and you can't do that on Amazon. So, and a lot of people don't know that. So a lot of the reviews that we get removed are ones that maybe they didn't know that they were violating Amazon's guidelines. But the other side of it is we also go after fraudulent buyers accounts, or people that have what they're called sock puppet accounts. But it's an account where somebody, maybe a competitor, owns it and comes and buys your products and will send it to just about anybody. They don't really care where it goes, and it says verified buyer, and then they can go and give you a 1-star review. Or what they'll do is they'll read and find out, like, what are the things that people are most worried about, Right. Like, give you an example, like let's say it's running shoes and they realize, hey, every you know, trail runner, what they're worried about is hurting their ankle. So guess what? They can go in and say, hey, this, I tried this shoe and guess what? I hurt my ankle extremely bad and had to go to the hospital and they almost broke. Well, if I'm reading that, I'm a trail runner. That's the last thing I want, right? I want support in my ankle. So they'll build out a, you know, they'll build out something that they know what everybody's fears are. Right. And then great. And then you read that and you go, oh my God, I don't want to take a chance because, you know, I heard these shoes are great, but this guy just said I broke his ankles, had to go to the hospital. That's the last thing I want. So those are the most of the stuff we file on are against Amazon's own guidelines, but we do look at fraudulent stuff as well. And there's different ways that our software can indicate or at least flag it. And then we have humans or people that would actually take a look at it and see what would need to happen to be able to get that review removed.
That's interesting because I did some subcontracting for a client who had a Shopify site, but they also sold their product on Amazon and found out that there's actually almost as a robust sub ecosystem of like basic optimization when it comes to discovery of products in Amazon. So as we broaden out our definition of, you know, SEO isn't Google reverse engineering, but thinking of other search engines, people often point first to, hey, social media, but you know, we have, you know, YouTube and we have Amazon. Amazon is huge and the volume of search is insane. So, what have you heard about best practices or things that companies that are listing themselves on Amazon or getting into the Amazon world might need to know or want to know about the search ecosystem?
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I have a client right now that what's happening is the big box retailers are interested in bringing it to market. But and guess what they did? They went and looked at their Amazon. That was the first thing they looked at was their Amazon reviews because, you know, it's like a search engine. Same thing like with YouTube, right? You want to learn how to do something. You want to see a review of a product. Well, people will go to, you know, they put it in Google. But guess what? Google's owned by YouTube or vice versa. And then great, you can put in searches there in YouTube as well. So I would say, listen, if you're a seller, the biggest thing you need to worry about, one of the biggest things, and I'm not just saying this because I have trace views, is really the reviews, right? I mean, we all, next time you go to Amazon, just think about where you're looking. You automatic, when you click on a listing, you go look at the reviews. It's automatic. It's just how we're programmed because if it's terrible reviews, I'm not going to waste my time. Right, if it has a 3.5 out of whatever five, and they have 100 reviews, I'm going to say no. I'm going to go find a product that's better than this. And so the reviews are going to be something that you want to protect because you can have the best product in the world, the best marketing, all this stuff, but if you guys have terrible reviews, it's your PPC costs are going to go up. I mean, there's all kinds of things. It's like, you know, with Google, like when you have an ad or something, when they talk about like quality score, right? Where the quality score is like, hey, this really fits what this fits what people are searching for. Hey, this is a great fit. It's the same thing with Amazon. If you have terrible reviews, Amazon's what's called the BSR, bestseller ranking, they're just gonna not, you're just not gonna be anywhere in the running at all. So that's what you have to do. You have to protect your reviews. I think that's one of the most important things. And then also, you know, I mean, being able to go in and monitoring those. I mean, that's one thing that we provide as, just baked into our service, but we have monitoring, which means that, you know, a lot of the times companies will get attacked around like Prime Day or Christmas or, you know, whenever the big money starts coming in. And guess what? When those reviews start coming in, our system actually monitors that and then we'll protect them. We'll file cases automatically, all, you know, filed manually, obviously through humans. We don't do any automation or use AI for filing because Amazon doesn't allow that, obviously. But, you know, we'll go in and make that. Now they can be covered there, not have to worry about the reviews, and they can worry about other stuff, whether it be tariffs or growth or PPC or, you know, maybe going direct to consumer as well, like whatever that looks like. You know, that's the hard part. The other cool part as you touched on, is you can do like SEO for Amazon, right? You can go in and optimize listings and you can optimize pictures and you can do all those types of things. My recommendation is always, you know, and when I was younger, I didn't do this as much. I do it now that I'm older and I'm going to say a little bit wiser, is, you know, finding somebody that is either a mentor or somebody that I think gets it, right? That really specializes either in the Amazon space or whatever, right? Somebody like yourself, like you say, hey, listen, I'm the SEO guy. Great. Well, then guess what? You've been doing this a long time. I could go and try to figure it out. I could read all kinds of blogs. Or guess what? If you have a budget to hire somebody to help be able to take you to that next level, there's extreme value in that. When I was younger, I would, I'll do it myself. I'll figure it out. It would take me a year or two. And I'm like, man, I could have just hired somebody and not wasted my time doing that. So my big thing is mentors and finding people that are smarter than me and hiring them and bringing them on and figuring out what that looks like to be able to grow the business. It's that will, you know, expedite your growth rate by 10 times because you have other people on there that are better at what they do, or obviously the best at what they do. And you're somebody as a student going to be learning from the game. So it's kind of awesome.
I get that. I have taken on many things myself, which in retrospect would have been probably a lot more profitable if I had taken that time to develop a business process and have somebody else doing that X, Y, and Z thing, even though I could and I did learn it. That's definitely delegation as a skill.
It is.
And then managing those people is definitely another skill. I'm curious because I understand that Amazon either has or is developing or is about to release an AI agent to assist with searches and develop Rufus. Results. Do you know anything about that? And that kind of brings us into the broader topic of how LLMs and AI agents and those tools are starting to impact. But thinking of, you know, Amazon as its own ecosystem is kind of different from how people are in my industry worried about AI right now. So I want to go down that track and because it has some different implications, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so Amazon has Rufus, right? And they're also coming out with some of their agents as well. But Rufus is going to be the main one that's in theory, it's supposed to, you know, help you make decisions like with PPC and make create ads. And there's a number of different things that Amazon is making possible through, you know, through AI agents. I think it's going to change the game. I mean, obviously, you know, there's some really good things that can happen from that. Do I think it's going to crush every PPC agency out there because Rufus is going to do it? I don't. I think maybe over time, but I think there's still time for people. There's still the human touch, and there's still things that I think AI can't recognize yet, right? I mean, of course, it's getting more intelligent every day with, you know, obviously the feeding of the models and stuff, and good things are happening there. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, you have to ask yourself, are you going to put all of your eggs in the Amazon basket, which means Amazon runs everything for you too, which I would believe, like, how does Amazon pick you over me or me over you, right? I mean, so let's say we're even, right? So yeah. Then what point, I mean, usually what that is the human factor where we go in and you hire somebody and they go, okay, let me tell you, this is what we can change. This campaign's going good. This one's not. So now you have Rufus, and how does Rufus, like, what is, if you and I are same on paper, we have very similar products, like, how do you, is it because I pay more? Or I don't know, yeah. Right? That's the hard part. I do think there's still some things that go into that aren't going to be just as easy as picking a side, right? I mean, there's got to be some more data and information there. And I don't think that people are fully going to trust Amazon, or I mean, anybody, really, not just Amazon. I mean, really anybody that would say, hey, I'll take control of everything. And it's like, yeah. Well, I don't know, right? Like, you're kind of big brother a little bit. And I like Amazon. Amazon's amazing. But still, like, if Google said, hey, we're going to take on everything. We're going to, you know, we'll take on everything for you. And it's like, okay. But that's a little scary, right? Because there's that other, that's kind of the X factor, is that I have somebody that's amazing at putting ads together. So are they better than whatever the AI agent is? I don't know, right? And do we get pushed in a situation where we have to use that? And it's like, okay, well, that's, what's my competitive edge then? If we all have the same, like, how is this one better than this one, right? Like, how do we make that decision? So I don't think we're there yet. I do think it's going to happen over time, potentially. And I do think there's value in AI, you know, making better decisions. I mean, think about software with SEO. And I'm sure when I got started, there was no crazy SEO software. So there was no Ahrefs. There was no SEMrush. I was going, okay, well, looks like I just got some traffic. Like, I think we're going good, you know? Like, I just got some sales in, right? So these are all things that will, over time, will change. And I think they'll get better over time. But I think we're a while out from anybody losing their job to, you know, to whether it be Rufus or something like that. I think it'll enhance it. You can make better educated decisions, which I think is a huge value. But I don't see it taking over humans and us losing the war to, you know, Will Smith and the AI agents that are going to come take over your family. I think we're at least a few weeks away from anybody coming and taking your family.
I think I've talked to a couple of different people that run PPC in general, you know, both on Meta and on Google as well. You know, Matt Brooks of Esoteric, you know, commented that they are pushing this angle where, you know, exact match is now phrase match, phrase now match is now broad match, and broad match is now crap. you know, trust the AI and you get way less control, and they're just like, yeah, just give us your money and we'll, you know, our AI will tailor the ads and we'll do all the A/B testing. At a certain point, you know, it's like ChatGPT or X, or having Grok come back and say, oh, here's the stock market information that indicates that you should buy this stock. And you're like, okay, that's great. But then you start to think about it, and you're like, wait, you're giving me stock advice now? Or
What
do
about
you have an
medical
interest in
advice?
that? Like,
What about,
you're telling me that those Twitter shares or those X company shares are prime? Wait a minute. And it's
That's
kind
the
of
hard
that
part.
same suspicion.
Yeah, because it's like who's what information's being fed to this, right? And is it, and that's what's can be awesome, but also can be scary, right? Like when you think about political stuff or anything like that, like it can be awesome, but it also is, I mean, I just think, yeah, with you, it's like, wait a second, you're offering these stocks, which you shouldn't be doing, right? I mean, stock advice or medical or legal, I mean, those are all things that you gotta, there's certain people that are in certain positions that should be recommending that stuff, and it's probably not AI. But who knows, right? I mean, it's going to be, there is a lot of ethical questions, I would think, that, at the end of the day, it's like, hey, is this ethically, does this make sense? Like, what is your, like, what are you pushing? What is your, are you pushing a narrative, or are you just, nope, we don't have no narrative here? Or, yeah, of course, I want to sell more stocks. Of course, X wants to sell more stocks. Of course, of course. But the problem is, at what point are they just giving a recommendation? At what point are they skewing the data to give you information so that you go and buy? I mean, I don't know how it's any different than the media. The media is, not that we can go down that road, but I'm just saying, right? Like, what do you think that it's like, oh, this is just organic information, but I don't know who put it together. What kind of information is being fed there? It's there is a lot of unanswered questions. I'm excited about it, but also you got to be a little cautious, like anything.
Who watches The Watchmen?
Yeah, exactly. Or who controls the Watchmen? Yeah, either way, yeah.
The Watchmen's a if you make an AI Watchmen, can you trust it based off of what information you fed it?
I mean, think about that. That's kind of scary, because if people, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there is, it definitely, when you really start talking about it, when you really think about it is, I'm like I said, I'm like equal parts scared and equal parts excited. Like very excited about the opportunity, because we use AIs obviously with reviews to be able to look at evaluate reviews at a, because we're reviewing thousands and thousands of reviews on a daily basis. We originally were using humans or people to do that, but it was just too much, and the margin of error, we could only have them work for 4 hours. There was a lot of things that we learned and said, hey, well, with AI, we can run this through AI. What I mean is that, have certain keywords, certain things that it evaluates, that it flags. Well, it can flag, it can go through thousands and thousands of reviews way faster than any humans could. Right. And so that's where the things got really interesting for us. For us, it's a very basic concept. I mean, basic in the sense that it's just looking for these certain things, right? We're not asking it to give us a crazy opinion or, hey, tell us how you feel about, the current president or any of that stuff. Like, we're not going down that road, right? There's a lot of things that play into that. For us, it's like, it's black or white. You either see this or you don't see this, right? And so, of course, the models got better over time as we started to build them and, started feeding them. And, now they're just amazing. But, but that's not an opinion-based thing. It's either A or B. There's no gray area with this. It's like either they cussed in the review or they didn't cuss. And here goes all the cuss words, and there we go. Now, there might be levels to that. There might be somebody that says this is a crappy product, right? Which crappy could be a cuss word. I mean, it's against Amazon's guidelines, but it's not going to be as strong as using the F word. So we do have to make that evaluation of, hey, here goes five reviews that break Amazon's guidelines, and two of them use the word crap, one of them uses the F word, one of them uses the S word, and the other one uses the A word, right? You guys throw in whatever cuss words you think are with those, right? And so that's then, okay, we say, okay, hey, we want to go after the F word and the S word and the A word, right? Because crap is something we could file on, but it's not quite as strong, but it still gets flagged. And then we make that assessment, humans or people make those assessments, our filers do.
I'm curious how you're seeing cross-pollination play out because, obviously you have their Amazon entry, you have kind of a homepage-ish that displays most of their products for any particular company, but they also have a site and they also have social media. They probably also have an email. From your perspective, what's your best advice to a company that is both on Amazon, has its own store, and also trying to do e-commerce sales in terms of, do you just straight up try to compete with yourself? Do you try to outrank or try to, send links to your Amazon products and profiles to try to get them ranked as well? Do you treat them equally or are they shunted to the side or is there such an additional cost to Amazon that it's worth that extra margin to try to push on your site, which you have more control over, that you can put more content out over. What's your recommendation for organizations that do play on Amazon, considering the bigger marketing picture?
Yeah, I mean, great question. So, at the end of the day, I think it depends on your product, right? Also depends on how saturated it is on Amazon, competition, cost to be able to get it up and get it going. Amazon is its own beast, and what I mean by that, there's a lot of nuances to the platform, and it's huge, obviously. I think we all know that. You just have to figure out, I think, just blindly going on Amazon, not to say you can't do that. But as I talked about earlier, is like you probably want to have a mentor, have somebody that if like you're a supplements and you want to jump in there, supplements is a very, very aggressive category. Now there's a ton of money that could be made, right? I mean, if you have a good product and good things, but you really have to be ready for that, right? It's not just having a great product and hey, we were direct to consumer, now we want to go on Amazon. It's a different beast. There's going to be a lot of things, the ins and outs of this, and being able to even get on the platform and then maybe getting attacked by competitors. There's just a lot of things that happen there. I'm not saying you shouldn't be on Amazon because Amazon is an amazing place. Like once you get on there and things go right, you can make a ton of money, but the thing is, it's also Amazon, as you touched on just right before I started answering this, is like you don't own Amazon, right? Amazon can change its policies at any time, but this is any platform, right? This can be any, this can be eBay, this can be, so there is value in it in the sense that you can put a product up on Amazon, and once you get it optimized, you could be making some sales, right? What you have to look at, or it's important to look at, is what your margins are, right? Like, does this make sense? So let's say if Amazon changes up their fee structure or does something different, if I sell something, if I get it for $2 and I sell it for $20, well, I've got some room there, right? But if I'm selling something for $20 and I get it out the door for $16, all it takes is Amazon to make one change there and you're not profitable, or shipping to go up a little bit, right? That can be any of those variables. So that is, I think, for me, would be an indicator. I think there's huge value in Amazon, but as you touched on, it's like, how do I don't want to cannibalize what I've built for my direct-to-consumer, right? And is that going to be just another revenue stream for me, which they can, be in an ecosystem and they can be fine? Or is this going to be something that everybody goes to Amazon? I mean, I know some direct-to-consumer companies, it was just, hey, like Amazon and the shipping and FBA, it makes sense for me. So I'll just ship all my product to Amazon and they can just buy it on Amazon. Great. That's, that can absolutely work. But once again, depends on margins and other things that you have going on there. But just know, I try to remind people, I used to do a lot of influencer marketing with clients, and you don't own Instagram, you don't own LinkedIn, you don't own Amazon. So, great, you've got some good things and good things are happening. That's awesome. But just know, you gotta prepare for a rainy day, or prepare for changes being made, or being, like, give you just a basic example. I mean, we had an ad up on Google that we had up for probably 2 years. Talking about trace views, and they just changed their policy. They're like, hey, you can't say that anymore. And it was a very basic thing. Like, and what they were asking for was not even that crazy, but like, yeah, you can't say that. I'm like, well, but once again, we've been marketing that for 2 years, and it's nothing out of the ordinary. We weren't saying anything shady or on, that was like right in the line. It's exactly what we do. But Google changed their policy, and they had the right to change their policy. Like, I can't be mad at that. But imagine if my whole business was hinging on that ad.
Yeah.
I would have been out of business overnight. So that's what you have to look at. We talk about diversification or, mitigating risk. Amazon can help you do that because Amazon can have its own little machine and you've got, you're doing direct to consumer, but you just have to figure out, is it going to be worth the risk, right? That I'm going to be doing that, right? Is it going to, and if it does cannibalize that, am I okay with that? Am I still making a good profit margin? Because obviously, you go direct to consumer, you're making more money. But there's also the level of shipping. There's a lot of other variables there that play into this, and it just comes down to, if does it make financial sense, and is it something that you're going to want to learn or pay somebody to learn? you know, that really comes up to, I mean, I know some huge brands that aren't on Amazon, and I also know some amazing companies out there that will come, if you already have a name in the industry, they'll actually won't charge you anything for the marketing, and you'll do like a rev share, and they'll take care of everything, take care of your ads, take care of everything. You just come with a good name and they're like, hey, we know you guys are good. We'll take care of everything. We'll do a rev share. You don't have to take on any of the headache of Amazon. So, and I say headache, I mean, everything has a headache to it, right? I don't mean just Amazon. Google has a headache. Bing has a headache. Like there's always levels to this, right? It's not always, if it's smooth sailing your whole career, then you're just oblivious to all the stuff that was going on, apparently, because that's just not how it works. You know, there's always a road bump somewhere. There's always something that's happening somewhere that we have to deal with. But that's part of, you know, that's part of this game that we enjoy.
I think, you know, I'm working with a company called Metaflex Glove. They're on Amazon. They have Shopify. And they worked with the WNBA because their gloves like help with arthritis, but also grip strength. And they got a huge bump in their brand search that I can see in Google Search Console based off of that and other organic things that we're doing. And it occurs to me that, you know, that is a benefit of doing that stuff in Google, optimizing your site, because that's going to raise all boats. You're going to get more brand searches, which will help if you have your Amazon listing under your site. You know, they don't, maybe they go instead of to your site directly, they go to your Amazon. That's going to raise all boats. Versus if you get more volume in Amazon, that's not going to help your website, you know. So if you're taking extra marketing time to, you know, participate in real world events, or you're doing email sends, or doing, you know, the cross marketing, branding, content marketing, going on podcasts, you know, she's done a couple of podcasts and gotten, you know, spikes in queries after those episodes goes live. Like, that's reflected in your Google search traffic, not in Amazon. So I think that kind of helps maybe solidify, you know, Amazon's a tool in your chest, especially since you don't own it, but it's like any other owned playground. You know, it does come back to you own your site and you get to market it. And hopefully that reflects as well in Google, Bing, and now we're worried about, you know, LLM-based search tools like ChatGPT, Perplexity, finding that information. I don't know if those LLM tools actually can dig into Amazon. Are you?
So, no, I mean, from what we've seen, I don't know if Amazon will allow that for now because they have their own tools right now. Obviously, with the search, if people are trying to find your product and it's on Amazon, Amazon used to not like outside traffic back in the day. They weren't a big fan of that. Obviously, they've opened up to it now because it's like, why would I not, right? Why would you not? When somebody goes search something and then Amazon pops up, like, that's great for Amazon. The LLM thing is going to be interesting because it just depends on what is searchable on Amazon, right? Like, is Amazon going to make it so the whole world can search anything and find anything? I don't know. I mean, that's. I think that the jury's probably still out on that, on exactly what that's going to look like. I do think there's an opportunity there, but everybody kind of has their little LLM robots and bots and all the other stuff. And so it's like, what do we let in? What do we allow? What do we not allow? Do we just keep this internal? Do we, you know, like, let the whole world see? I don't know. I think people are still opening gates and closing gates and still trying to figure out what that optimal thing is. And I think we'll find out eventually, but it's, you know, like anything. I mean, just think about SEO in the beginning. Like, you know, we do a lot of stuff now. We actually help clients with, you know, getting indexed on like the LLMs and stuff like that. And I've gone back to like the basics of SEO. Like, you're just, it's weird. It's like, you can write content, but it doesn't need to be this big, you know, 8,000 word article. You're just showing, you know, you're just sending indicators to them to be able to pick up. We're testing a lot of stuff right now. I mean, obviously for Shane Barker, and we actually use whatever we learn at Shane Barker on TraceFuse. So if you look up just about any keyword for TraceFuse, we're number one for just about any keyword we go after. Not only because I have an SEO background, but also because we've been testing a lot of stuff. Like, I shut Shane Barker down for a few years because I was waiting to see what was going to happen with AI. You know, I was very intrigued by it. And I didn't want to sell something that I hadn't used myself. It's very easy to say, oh, try this and try that. And I wanted to be able to, I wanted to eat my own dog food, right? For lack of a better, you know, explanation. And so now that Trace Views is going nuts, we opened up Shane Barker again. We just revamped the site probably a few months ago. And now we've had some great amount of people that have come over to us and asking about these types of services has been awesome. Because once again, we wanted to prove if we could do it on our own stuff. And if we can't, I'm not selling it. I'm only selling on stuff that I know that we know how to use. But it's the mindset from an SEO mindset is just very different. Like you look at stuff and I'm like, that just doesn't make sense from an SEO perspective. But this is a whole different thing though. We're trying I was trying to merge those, right? Oh, these have got to be similar. And we're like, well, there's distant cousins, but that doesn't mean that because this works here, this works there. And so you've had to come to this whole new mindset of this is different, this is new, and I have to be open to that and try to figure out what that looks like. But it's not a perfect science, right? Nobody has that perfect answer yet, right? A lot of people have tried things. A lot of people are testing stuff. Some amazing companies out there that have AI and LLM and search engines and how you can find it and how you can get seen. But I think it's still very preliminary, you know, because of the testing. But I think every day we get closer and closer to some good answers. And you know, like anything else, just like SEO, you'll get people that don't know what they're doing and say they do. And then you'll get people that are absolutely crushing it, that are quiet and behind the scenes and making magic happen. So, you know.
What's something actionable in the LLM space that you've like, okay, you got, you know, you're selling stair handrails. You can do this specifically. Because there's a lot of like wishy-washy, like, you know, or general advice, like write more for the bottom of the funnel. Well, okay, I guess like that is kind of actionable. You should have been doing that all along, but yeah, okay. Like you can't write all of these, like AI has eaten the sandwich at the top of the funnel. Like you can't have a content marketing campaign of what are stair handrails, but you know, how do our stair handrails compare in safety versus Stair Pro? You know, that's bottom of funnel. What's your, you know, LLM optimization, you know, do this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say what I would do is I would go, I mean, you can obviously look as in Google as an example, right? When you go and put in something of the AI mode or whatever, and it kind of shows you some things. I would look at where your competitors are being mentioned and from where they're being mentioned, right? So what articles, whether that be Reddit, whether that be Quora, I mean, these are all things that question-based, which I think very easy for AI to make an assessment because somebody said this 10 different times, and so they're pulling that together and saying, hey, I think this is the best option. But a high percentage of the time, they're going to show you where that came from. So guess what? If that's what's working and the AI's seen that, right? Like, think about this.
Go
like,
get it on that list.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, that's just, I know that sounds like very common sense, but like, we do that with SEO too, right? You look at something, you're like, all right, where do we see, what backlinks are they getting? Where do they get these backlinks? Well, guess what? This was a, you know, a domain ranking or domain authority of whatever it is, 90, and they got it one. Well, hey, maybe I should look at that. So think of it. You don't have to go deep into like, you know, search engines and tons of software. Like just do an initial check and take a look at that and say, okay, is this something that, you know, that we talk about, right? And is that something that, how can we get on there? Assuming that that's what you guys do, right? I think that's the other thing is don't expect to get on anything. You know, we talk about being, you know, the main person that talks about a certain subject. If you are that company, go look at, once again, look at your competitors and see what you can do to be able to get on those listings, be able to get interviewed. I think the more exposure, the better, obviously, which is, I know, Captain Obvious as well. But I think podcasts, I think Reddit posts, we've seen a lot of the Reddit stuff is indexing well because obviously they've opened that up, Google and Reddit, you know, decided to get along. And so now there's traffic heading up that way. So, you know, you don't have to overthink it. That can be the initial check. There'll be plenty of softwares and stuff over time that will be able to, you know, do a deeper dive for you. But I think that's probably the first thing you want to take a look at because those could be some easy wins for you.
I agree. Oh, it came up in my interview with an ad guy, Justin Oberman. Turned out he pitched him on LinkedIn. Hey, come on my podcast. And he's like, oh, you SEO guys, I'm surprised you want to talk to me, a salty old ad guy. But his thing was, you know, whether it was, you know, Barnum and Bailey said, you know, you can hoodwink people as long as the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
And we're, we are now seeing with LLMs much more a flattening of the landscape, and it's much more about an attention economy again. You know, because for a minute it was all about decoding the algorithm. There was so much traffic flowing through Google, such a monopoly, like this one PowerPoint that it was, you know, SEO had its shining moment. They're like, oh yeah, I can reverse engineer and we backlinks and you know, content and blah blah blah. But I think he's right. You know, with the ubiquity of social media channels, with you know, LLMs basing their entries based off of citations and, you know, brand terms, we're again participating in an attention economy. And so that changes the game if you think about it from a PR headspace.
It does. I mean, we've seen a huge, I think, push into the PR and press releases as well. Because guess what? That is citations and those are mentions. And, I think eventually they'll catch on if you're doing just, tons of, press release submissions or distribution. But I do believe that that's also a variable, right? I mean, I think it's a mix of a lot of different things, right? Like you want to be seen, that's what people are going to come up with is the matrix of, hey, if you do some press release stuff, hey, you get mentioned on some websites, hey, you're also going to do some guest posts, you're going to maybe be interviewed on Forbes. Like all of that will kind of play into this overall. The LLM is going to say, okay, fact check here, good. Fact check here. I mean, not fact check, but at least we see that they're there, see that they're there. Hey, there's, some validity to what we've got going on. But it's a very different mindset than SEO. That's been the hardest thing for me because I grew up on SEO. So I'm like, I go, yeah, but that doesn't make sense. And if I remember SEO 15, 20 years ago, and young little Shane trying to remember this, I'm like, all right, I'm back to that with LLMs, right? I mean, we've learned a lot, obviously, but so I'm not quite phase one, but it's like, it's just moving so fast. But there are certain things, if you don't try to take it all in and just say, okay, let's look at the common signs, right? Like if we look up certain things, there are some searches that we can do to be able to look at this and say, okay, what do we need to do to optimize this better, right? And once again, it tells you where people are being mentioned and why they're being mentioned and stuff like that. It's just trying to figure out that perfect mix to be able to get, whether that be, earned media or, push stuff you're pushing out, whatever that is. And what does that look like? And once again, what makes it so that you're being seen by the LLMs? And right now, a lot of companies are being seen and don't know why they're being seen. So we're still very much the wild, wild west, as I would call it, just in the sense of, nobody's got it fully figured out. So somebody says, oh my God, we've got everything figured out. Tomorrow's going to change anyways. Like not all of it, but it's like, we haven't come up with like with SEO, it's somewhat easy, right? Great content, backlinks, mentions. Like we've kind of figured that out because of the reverse engineering that we've been doing for 20 years, right? And now we're going back to, okay, now there's some new sheriffs in town that are pulling in some of that traffic, and how do you get seen there, right? And that, it's a whole new ball of wax. You got to rethink how you think. Which is going to be a challenge for a lot of people. For me, the reprogramming was difficult, but we're doing good now. So, I obviously was listening, and my reprogramming worked a little bit at least.
That's good. So, shout out where people can find you. If you got anything interesting going on at Shane Barker or Trace Views coming up, let us know. I'll add it to the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. So, yeah, you guys can go over to just shanebarker.com. That's shanebarker.com. Take a look at that. We've got some like a learning hub and some other stuff. We're always trying to, talk and help businesses in any way that we can. You can reach out to me. My email is just shane@shanebarker.com. So it's nothing too original. If you know how to spell Shane and Barker, then you're halfway there. You can give me an email. You can follow me on LinkedIn. We're crushing it on LinkedIn right now. I get like almost 1 million impressions a month. So things have really been heating up over there. And then you obviously can take a look at Trace Fuse too. Trace Fuse is just TRACEFUSE.AI, because we are obviously have an AI component to this. And this is going to be a shocker too. If you want to reach out to me there, guess what? It's Shane@TraceFuse.AI. So if you can still spell Shane, if you can spell TraceFuse and put the dot in the AI, guess what? You guys can be connecting with us. The other thing I will tell you, if there's any Amazon sellers that want to try our tool, we actually have a free tool where it's called an Amazon Review Checker, where they can check their reviews and we'll tell them which ones are in violation of Amazon's guidelines. It is a free tool. We don't charge anything for it. The goal is for them to be able to see which reviews would be in violation, have them try to file on their own. And if they're able to file them and get the reviews removed, that's awesome. Then they don't need us. That's a good thing. But if they don't, obviously we'll always be around. But we'll put that, the Amazon Review Checker, we'll put that in the notes as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time, Shane. See you around.
Thanks, Jeremy.